Hey, Martin Sharp, the Fit for Business, Fit for Life coach here, and I hope you're going to enjoy this next amazing episode of Road to Rediscovery by the amazing Aubrey Johnson. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can get this show anywhere you listen to your podcasts, worldwide, even on platforms you probably never even heard of. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. We also invite you to leave a rate and review if you listen on Spotify. Now, if you listen on any other platform, we still want your feedback. Feedback is a gift. And we invite you to leave that feedback by sending us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you a shout out in a future episode. And as always, we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. All right. My special guest is an expert in productivity, decision-making, and personal development. Yes, that's right. She is the Focusologist, and her latest book, Reset Mindset, offers invaluable insights and strategies for achieving success and fulfillment. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Penny Zenker to the show. Penny, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Oh, so oh, well, thank you. Fantastic. We're thrilled to have you. So let's start off, if you don't mind, by sharing with the listeners the distinction of a focusologist and your scope of work as a focusologist.
Well, it doesn't mean that I'm the only one in the world who's super focused and directed. Actually, squirrel, it's just the opposite, right? I created this word because I struggle with focusing on what matters most. There's so many distractions and so many things changing. And I really believe that for myself and for those around me, that we need to relearn and recommit to focus, and we need to practice it on a daily basis. So I thought, what better way than to create a word to invite others to kind of join this movement to become a focusologist, to relearn and recommit to focus so that we kind of take back our focus, since it's, you know, getting more and more scattered as things get more and more crazy with technology and everything that's going on in the world. So,
yeah. Yeah, without a doubt, right? I mean, with the advancement of technology, I mean, it's constantly changing. Social media, and even without social media, the societal expectations that people have. And to me, I don't know, social media just kind of perpetuates that and makes it even more so of a societal pressure. You have to look a certain way or be a certain way, or you're always living your best life and this type of thing. Right. There's I don't know what else to call it, but respectfully, noise. I mean, there's so much noise around it. So it can distract and take us away from that focus. Just as you mentioned, and coming up with that name, as you said there, Penny, you were, you know, it was something that you struggled with and that you wanted to take back and reclaim as well. Outside of that, and maybe part of that, I wanted to know what you do today as helping people reclaim their focus as well as resetting their mind. Was that inspired by a past challenge or obstacle in your journey outside of what you've already shared with, you know, your troubles focusing on?
Oh, definitely. You know, the reset mindset, talking about, you know, reset moments where all this really started from when I tried to trace it back, you know, what is this also? Why am I always learning the lesson about how to focus on what I can control and being able to focus on what matters most? And it's really been a thread through my whole life. And it really, I recognize that when my father passed away, when I was 19, he died in an accident. And I realized that I kind of started this practice of taking what I call reset moments whenever and wherever I needed them to sort of bring me back into focus on the things that I can control and try to let go of the things that I can't control, because my life just felt so out of control. Yeah. And I started to see them everywhere. And I started to see, hey, this is not just a resiliency tool. This is a time management tool to help me get focused on my priorities and reset my priorities. It's a communication tool that can open me up to be more empathetic and listen more and be more thoughtful of my interactions and, right? It's just it's across the board. And that's what has excited me, that I've actually found a really simple language for it. That's taken me only, my whole life to be able to recognize what are those strategies that I've done and used with my clients all these years. And it's really great that I've been able to simplify it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. And being able to simplify it really helps when it comes to guiding and encouraging, I would believe, your clients, and help them see from a new perspective in a more simplistic way of how they can kind of cultivate their lives and resetting their minds and understanding a strategy, behind resetting themselves and having those reset moments. And we're going to talk about those reset moments here in a few minutes. One thing I am really intrigued by is, and maybe you can share some insight and clarify this for me and the listeners. From what I've read in some parts of your book, and quite honestly, this lovely package that you sent me for the reset mindset package, care package, I can't help but think that, there's a lot of things and strategies that would involve kind of, I don't know, decompressing or clearing your mind, right? And to me, at first sight, it would seem a bit counterintuitive, but there is such a thing, I believe, as some sort of strategy to clear your mind in order to sharpen your focus. Is that such a thing? Can you share some insight on clearing your mind actually sharpens your focus?
Absolutely. I mean, we already know from many studies that, for instance, multitasking doesn't work, right? That it's really task switching and it creates a cognitive, dysfunction, right? So we get less cognitive ability, the more things, more open loops that we have, the more things we start and leave open. So just there, right, clearing our mind, right, to be able to sharpen our focus, because the studies show that we have 50% more time to complete something and also 40% more mistakes. So, so it's actually scientifically proven that rest and also just taking these pauses to clear our minds help us to have that clarity in focus. That's just one example, right? But there's other studies that help us to see that as well from different angles.
I gotcha. So as we all know, life is ever changing. And, change is the one thing we can rely on when it comes to just going through life in general, right? And something we've had as a priority for years may no longer be a priority for us today due to the many changes of life, different seasons, right? So how does one know when it's time to shift their focus to a new priority? There may be some telltale signs that are like blatantly obvious that kind of quote unquote smacks you in the face or hits you right between the eyes. But I mean, for those that aren't as obvious, how can one detect the telltale signs or know when it's time to shift their focus on a new priority as they go through life? I would imagine that would be some of the tools and methods that you go through with your clients.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing to understand is that we need to have an open mindset, you know, an openness about us, a willingness to reinvent, because that's the first telltale sign, is that we're resistant to hear anything new, that we're so laser focused that maybe we've lost sight of the big picture, right? So, and quite frankly, this openness is so important because best practices of the past don't necessarily mean that they're the best practices of the future. Like you said, our priorities may need to shift. So many things are shifting that it may have worked great. I'm a firm believer that things work until they don't. And, right. and you have to be open to recognize when they're not working anymore. So many times, we find ourselves pushing through and pushing past where we know that we're not gaining traction, or we kind of know it's not working, but we keep banging our head against the wall for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe we've invested too much already. So we feel like we can't give up. There are times when it makes sense to give up and to quit. So I don't know if that answered your question, but the first thing is when we feel like we're not getting the results that we want.
Yeah.
When we're feeling that resistance.
Yes.
And also responses from, like, you know, we have to take in that feedback that's going on around us. Are we getting other signals? Maybe it's even our own health and well-being, right? Is that,
oh, for sure.
Are we feeling exhausted? Are we grumpy all the time? Right. That might also mean that you're pushing it too hard. So, you know, because you asked a little bit of a broad question. So those are some different trigger points, right, that you can look out for.
Yeah, those are huge trigger points. And I appreciate you pointing those out, Penny. Those are telltale signs. And one of the reasons I'm particularly glad that you've pointed those out is because people, it's hard to strike a balance for some people. When they are working on a priority, they've been working on a priority and focused on that priority for so many years, for so long, and a time comes in their life where there's a change, and you feel some resistance to that change, or you feel that, you know, you're not getting the results that you're looking for that you were used to getting, like in the past. You know, that can help us as far as give us a barometer on whether or not it's time to shift our focus, because naturally, I think anyone with strong resolve, determination, tenacity would be thinking to themselves like, well, no, I just need to power through. Right. The persistence and the tenacity that got me here is what I need to continue doing to break through this wall or this barrier, you know, but having those indicators is key to helping someone determine maybe it's time for a new shift in focus.
Absolutely. Right. Tenacity can work for us and it can work against us. And I think the thing is that we wait too long to check in.
Yeah, we do.
And 100%. We could be checking in every single day, right? We can be checking in. Am I focused on the right things? Is this goal still the right goal?
That's right.
Very often we don't ask that question. And so it's just not the right goal anymore for the circumstances or the situation. Or you have a team that not everybody's understanding that they're working towards the same goal. So like there's different interpretations and they're all meaning well, and everybody's working really hard. But if you're all working towards slightly different goals, then it's not going to be successful. Maybe I can give you an example that might be supportive?
Sure.
So when I was working at this market research company, I came in and, you know, the idea was, is we need to upgrade the technology. And so that was sort of the goal that everybody was taking on, and everybody had their siloed approach of what that meant for updating the technology.
Right.
But I guess the good thing is when I came in, I wasn't from the industry, and I said, well, wait, I don't want to just take for granted that you're saying that we need to upgrade the technology.
Yeah.
So I started to ask questions and get curious, right? And challenge people to say, well, what happens when we update the technology? Where would we be compared to our competitors?
Right.
You know, will we have an advantage, or will we be the same, or, you know, where does that put us? And so by asking these questions, we find out, well, actually, that's not going to give us an advantage. It's good. We haven't invested over the years, so it's only going to bring us up to where we're equally competitive. And I'm like, well, what's the point of spending this huge amount of money
right
to bring us where we're not even going to gain any market share? So
yes,
right, we have to challenge each other and challenge our goals to say, is this still like the right thing? And when we rethought and realigned around a goal being, no, our goal is to have a competitive advantage.
Right.
Now we were like, well, actually, this isn't the solution. Mm-hmm. And we were able to creatively look at other options to, you know, find a solution that ultimately led to us being more competitive. But, you know, everybody just kind of goes, oh, yeah, that's what we need to do. It's the first thing that's in front of you, but it's not necessarily the best thing or the right thing. So we have to be checking in more often by challenging those assumptions that we're making, challenging the goals that we've set, challenging even the metrics, you know, because the metrics might be no longer where what we need to be measuring for the future. So
sure,
we have to be able to constantly reset.
Yeah. And continue to ask the question, you know, what problem is it we're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. And are we all trying to solve that same problem and not the siloed approach where everyone's trying to address a different problem or variation of it, I guess. Exactly. Right. Oh, I really appreciate that clarification, Penny. That is huge. And I want to just kind of point out for the benefit of the listeners that this is a concept that is applied or can be applied to our personal lives in our development personally, as well as working cohesively as a team. Would that be accurate, Penny?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Hey, so one other question I wanted to ask is regarding this type of transformation, right? This way of thinking, resetting our minds, readjusting our focus, you know, doing the exercises and developing strategies for clarity so we can resharpen our focus. All of these things, whether it's for personal development reasons or part of a team, I would imagine would have some sort of ratio between what I call head and heart. So there's the cerebral side where I guess your frontal cortex that is more, I don't know, more rigid, and it's just problem solving oriented, whereas, you know, the heart is more emotional, and I would imagine emotions would be involved to some degree when it comes to resetting and refocusing. So my question is, with virtues such as decision making, personal development, and productivity requiring that cerebral practical investment in order to achieve those things, do any of those virtues also require an emotional investment, if that makes sense?
I'm not sure I understand the question 100%, but you want to rephrase it, or you want me to answer it as best I understood?
Let me try to rephrase it. So if we have, say, a virtue such as decision-making, when it comes to decision-making, I and this is just my perception, I take it as a very cerebral. Okay. It's put my heart, park that at the door and deal with what's very factual. Okay. This is very factual. Here's what we have here. A, B, and C based on this and our current situation. Here's the most practical direction to take or decision to make. Okay. Very cerebral. However, not all decisions can be that because there are circumstances where emotions are involved. So if it's a decision like, God forbid, I have a grandparent who's on life support, you know, and there hasn't been any power of attorney or any do not resuscitate type of clarification, you know, then I have factors to weigh out. But emotions are involved. I mean, can you speak to
a lot?
A lot, absolutely.
Yeah.
So when someone has things like that in their that they're coming to a crossroads at to come to a decision, and it's involving emotion, how does one address that so that they can make the most effective decision? While being as cerebral as possible and going based on data and the facts.
Gotcha. Okay, I understand. So emotions are part of these decisions, right? And the reason we have what I call a reset practice, or we take a reset moment, mm-hmm. is to regulate our emotions, because the situation that you gave is highly emotional. You have a personal relationship with, you know, the person, you know, your parent or grandparent.
Yeah.
And so in your heart, you don't want to let them go. And if there's nothing that's stated that's what they want, then, you know, you might be in turmoil. What do they want? This is what I want. Mm-hmm. And so a reset practice and taking a reset moment, that purposeful pause, helps us to step away emotionally, you know, kind of. There's three steps. The first one is to step back, mm-hmm. right? To step back away from the emotion or the way we've always done things, the ways that we've looked at things, and try to step into, take a look at the bigger picture, and then step into number two, which is to get perspective, right? Because gotcha. When we're super emotional, even if we're super happy and elated, it's not only emotions that are, you know, I'll use the word negative, but they're not negative.
Right, right.
But anything that's highly emotional might make us very reactive, and we might jump at the first thing because we're, you know, in this heightened state, but that might not be the best long-term solution. And mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. us stepping back away from it, A, in itself gives us perspective. We might put our grandmother's hat on to say, okay, I know my grandmother. Now that I step away from my emotion, mm-hmm. what would she have wanted? Did she ever say anything to me about that? Or let me ask, you know, my mom or, you know, whoever, right? Let me ask somebody else who's important in her life that had experience with her. So then we can reach out and look for other ways to find solutions so that we can find some facts, mm-hmm. And so that we can assess the environment. And then we can realign around the best solution, right? That's step back, get perspective, and realign. And they're just simple, repeatable steps that help us to regulate emotions, to come back to focusing on the things that we can control, to assess the facts, to assess other people's opinions and inputs and options and possibilities, whereas otherwise we just want to jump at the first thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I tell you, I mean, that three-pronged approach that you just mentioned, I mean, speaks volumes to me, and I'm sure it speaks volumes to the listeners as well, Penny. Taking a step back, and your strategies and your methods help regulate our emotions so that we can make a cerebral decision, right? And it's kind of like, this is it's not the best analogy I can think of, but it's something I thought of when I became a father, over 26 years ago. So it's like, okay, new mom, new dad, new baby. And you know, we want to be our best for the baby, be available for the baby, nurture, take care, guide, raise, feed the baby, you know, and so we do. However, occasionally there's a time when mom and dad need to go out and have dinner together or go to a movie or maybe take a walk, you know, and that kind of re-energizes and recharges us to be there and available. And as people are saying these days, to me, it's a cliche, but they're saying show up, you know, for the child, and be in that state to where, you know, they're not overwhelmed, you know, they're not worn out.
Sure.
You know, they've recharged. And so, taking that step back, as you mentioned, go through the strategies and the exercises to regulate that emotion so that you can make a decision that's not emotionally charged. You know, that's tremendous. That makes all the sense in the world. So, again, thank you for clarifying that and making it known that, you know, emotions are taken into consideration with your strategies. You know,
oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you check it. You might come back to the same decision and say, this is the best decision.
Right.
And that's okay. Right. You're just, you're checking in. But, what was I going to say? You know, the parenting example that you used, right? It's just being more purposeful, right? Yeah. Is that you want to make sure you're making a purposeful decision.
Yes.
And that, you know, not only do you want to step back and not feel overwhelmed in the day-to-day of taking care of your children, but you have a relationship with your spouse that is not being cared for. Right.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have a date night, I mean, that's where this whole concept came from, you know, is, wow, we need to, a lot of parents are so engrossed in the raising of their children that they have to step back and take a date night and say, we want to be purposeful about fostering our relationship and making sure that our kids will have parents that stay together.
Yes.
And so, you know, one of them is to deal with the overwhelm, but the other one is to reconnect with one another.
Yes.
And make sure that you're being purposeful about it. So it's kind of like, again, it's recognizing that that's your goal, is to stay connected, you know, and care and love each other in a way that is not just as a parent, but as a couple.
Yeah.
And by doing so, bringing that back into focus, then you can take some strategies, some alignment around, you know, the actions that are going to support that. And I remember what I was going to say now.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was going to say is, you know, people are like, duh, like these, when you say them, step back, get perspective and realign. It's like, well, duh, I know that.
Yeah.
And I know we know that, but we don't do what we know. And so giving ourselves some language, that's why this reset moment is the trigger.
Yeah.
Is putting them in, you know, these timeouts or check-ins that help us say, are we taking care of our relationship?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe, you know, families, because you gave a couple of family examples.
Yeah.
There's this thing that family have these family meetings, right? And they have these meetings as check-ins to get feedback from one another. Hey, what's going well and how are we working? And what's not going well? Like, hey, you guys are slobs and you're not putting your things away and that's causing, you know, this. And so let's come back to the way that we want to organize ourselves at home so that we are respecting each other's space and, you know, and so forth. So these family meetings are like those check-ins that help us to reset. And so there's a whole ton of different strategies that could come under that. But what's happening in that check-in is we're stepping back, connecting with one another, connecting to the bigger purpose. We're getting some perspective on where we are and where we want to be. And then we're realigning as a family and individually as how we're going to, what actions we're going to take to support one another in these goals. So the steps are the way of thinking, but they come in lots of different shapes and forms.
Interesting.
Okay. And we might already be doing them.
Yeah.
But when we see it as an actual reset practice, maybe we're just getting awareness.
Yeah.
And we're stopping there. And we're saying, oh, yeah, you know, our relationship could be better. But if you're not really getting some perspective, well, how could we make it better? And what do you need? And what do I need? If we don't have a deeper conversation to really get perspective and, you know, and feedback from one another that we're really listening to and that we're going to take action with. And, you know, then, you know, awareness without action is useless, right? It's not really bringing us towards our goal.
Correct. For sure. And, speaking on that, kind of dovetailing off of that, Penny, wanted to know, in your work with your clients, what is the basis for which of your strategies you pursue? So let's say you have a palette, and the palette has various strategies for resetting the mind. Some of these strategies, you know, they may include calm, stillness, quietness, and others may involve thought and reflection, you know. But what is the circumstances that warrant what strategy you deploy? I mean, based on your immense experience and the work that you do with your clients, how do you know what to pull out of the arsenal or off the palette, so to speak? To practice that strategy, if that makes sense.
Well, I think you could probably answer this as well, right? Okay. You know, and what I'm getting to is that any situation is about getting curious about it. So I don't know until I have that discussion, until people are revealing what their challenges are.
Yes.
You know, and why is that a challenge? You know, so somebody can say, well, this stresses me. Okay, well, let's understand more specifically. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what specifically is stressing you. Cause we tend to talk about things at a very high level.
Yeah.
So I help to chunk people down to the specific thing. Right. Yes. So, you know, maybe it's that they're not setting any boundaries and that, you know, at the end, they think they're mad at someone else.
Yeah.
But that's deflecting, because the truth is they're a little bit mad of themselves because they're not setting a boundary and somebody is walking over that boundary, but it's because you're allowing them to, right? We train people how to treat us. So it would be discovering the specifics. Okay. And it does require reflection and thoughtful questions. And then I would say, okay, in that case, right, it would be, okay, how do you define, sit down and think about what are your musts and must nots in this relationship? If we're sticking to like the relationship theme, right? Mm-hmm. That's a way to step back, right? I've given them a question. A question is a way for them to step back away from it. A question makes us think about it, right?
Yes. Yes.
The good thing about a question is
any
question is a reset practice because it makes you step back and think about it. Okay.
Okay.
What is it that I want from this relationship? What must happen in order for me to feel important in this person's life? Or, you know, this can also be for a job. What must happen in relationship to this employer? You know, I must be paid a fair wage. I must feel respected. I must be given a sense of autonomy.
What
must not happen, right? Must not happen. And so if it's not a fit, but if you don't know what they are and you don't get some perspective on what they are, then you can't really realign around it because you can't communicate it. I need to be able to communicate with my employer, like if I have, now we're switching a little bit to a business sense. If I have a leader that's really micromanaging me, and that's a must not for me, like I need to have autonomy and I need to feel trusted. And
it
doesn't make me feel trusted.
Right.
You know, I need to have a conversation with that person. And that's a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we use some inviting language, I might say to my leader, hey, you know, could we take a reset moment in, you know, in our work together? Especially if you could, you know, if that is included into the culture, a lot of cultures use some language that right. help to open up difficult conversations. And that was yes. one of the intentions around it, is it becomes something that you say to yourself when you want to reset, but you can also do it with others and say, you know, I think we need a reset moment here. If you're having a meeting that's going out of, you know, out of scope, and then you say, yes. okay, guys, we need to have a reset moment to bring us back to the scope of
bring
this
us
meeting.
Back home. That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, you see it's only in that reflection that we can then have that conversation and realign. And yeah. I think I'm going on and on and on. So
No.
I'm answering the question or going
no,
off
you,
on
no, it. No. You certainly answered the question for sure. And it makes total sense. You know, being able to have that point of discovery, it's going to take some back and forth. It's going to take some Q&A. That's all part of diagnosing, right? And yes. And that's incredibly important. And you not only answered it for an individual scenario, but you also answered the question from a team organization standpoint. So I appreciate your flexibility in providing clarity for both, which is really cool. Speaking of cool, I want to talk about your cool book here for a minute, if you don't mind.
Let's talk about the cool book.
Oh, fantastic. There it is. The Mindset one. Reset. A Reset Mindset. It's a great book. I've been going through it. And, you know, in your book, there's an area where you talk about the power to choose, right? And there's a quote, and I've heard this quote before, but it made me smile when I read it in your book. And the quote goes like this: between stimulus and response, there is a space. The power to choose is our response. The power to choose our response is in that space. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So in this question, I hate splitting hairs, but I wanted to, for clarity's sake, ask, is it our growth and freedom? Is our growth and freedom reliant upon us having the correct response, or just the fact that we're exercising our power to choose to respond? Or is it both?
Well, that's a good philosophical question. I would say both, right? Okay. So that was, you know, that there's a question of whether Viktor Frankl said that or whether Stephen Covey paraphrased yeah. and said that. So, because right. I just recently was at an event with Stephen M. R. Covey, and he was saying, you know, that was, you know, that was my dad. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I think it's both. I think okay. that freedom and growth lie in the ability to choose.
Yep.
I think first and foremost, it's there, right? You said yeah. the other option was what, the making the right choice?
Yeah, making the right choice, or just the fact that you're exercising the right to choose to respond.
I think it's the exercising the right to choose.
Okay.
And I think that when we do honor that space, which I've then named as the reset moment, is that space, right?
Yes.
So that's
yes.
kind of the, you know, I didn't have to quote it. I just named that little space that nobody's yeah. talking about.
Yeah.
Or that they're talking about.
Right.
But I think that the fact that we are giving ourselves that space and honoring that space will help us to make better choices.
That makes a lot of sense. It will help us make better choices and kind of organically move us in the direction of making the right response.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with that, right?
Yeah.
Who knows
yeah.
what the right, I mean, that's a whole philosophical question. As a matter of fact, in the book,
yeah.
when it was being written, that was actually one of the things is we changed the language from the right response in somewhere in there to
yeah.
To the best response, because
okay.
That
can be subjective.
That exactly, right?
Yeah.
Somebody,
yeah.
you know, and it might be right for the moment. It might be right for you, but not for me. So, you know, always when you're writing something down and you're using language,
it's a tap dance.
It's a tap dance. That's a great way to put it. It's a tap dance.
For sure. So Penny, is there a difference between responding and reacting?
For sure. I think everybody knows, right, that there is definitely a difference there. And, you know, reacting is that impulse.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's you know, and you mentioned earlier about being emotional, right? We tend to react when we're emotional. And responding is being more purposeful. It's really because you may respond in a way that you're responding in a way that's in alignment. It means it's in alignment with your goals, your values, your intentions. Right. You're making an intentional choice in that constant and conscious, right?
Yes. I think that
we make a lot of reactions are often unconscious. Mm-hmm. And so in my TEDx, I talk about making the unconscious conscious. And that's a little bit of what I'm talking about here with this reset moment is utilizing that space. It's an unconscious space between stimulus and response. So when we recognize it consciously, it now puts us in a place, you know, where we can really respond. Otherwise, we are subject to reaction.
Yes. Yes. I understand. So yeah, that space is in a subconscious state, but if we're conscious and we recognize that and we're in that space consciously, we can bring that to light. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say in my TEDx, I talk about what I call the energy of thought, and you might be able to slow it down when you recognize it. It slows it down just a fraction so that you can actually pay attention to, let's say, what your thoughts, what meaning you're giving something in that moment.
Yes.
So that you can be more conscious in how you want to approach a person or a situation or a circumstance.
Wow. Can you imagine? Can you just imagine if everyone in the world would stop and think before taking action, how less violence would be in the world, less conflict, maybe, and not even just responding to another person in a violent way, but making a decision that would provoke any type of violence. I mean, thinking before you do, right? And again, like you said earlier, it's like, duh, you know, it's right there in front of us, you know.
But we're emotional beings. And so, you know, and even especially now with how much we're distracted, that is also a reaction.
Yes.
Is we're allowing ourselves. So what's happening is we're addicted to this stimuli, to distraction, and all that does is make our reactive nature even more so, right?
Right.
So we are very reactive in, I think it's growing people being more reactive than responsive. So that's why we need to take back our focus, coming back to where we started with the focusologist, right? We have to take back our focus because that level of distraction, living in a state of distraction, you know, is I saw some studies that talked about how it's part of the mental health crisis, you know, and leading to loneliness and because it's a very reactive state that we're putting ourselves in and no longer in control.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Which is driven by emotion and hair trigger reactions. Right. So, and being able to kind of control or squelch that a little bit so that we have time to reset, think, and take our best foot forward in the best response to your point. Right.
And it takes 60 yeah. seconds. Like, you know, Thrive Global has been doing a lot of work around actually resetting and you know, they've embedded it into workflows within various different organizations. And in the studies they've shown, it just takes 60 seconds to reset our brain and to lower the intensity. And once we do that, right, and we can emotionally regulate, now we can interact with the situation much more intelligently.
Absolutely. You
know, and so it isn't brain surgery, and it really doesn't take very, very much time. So people individually and companies just need to be conscious of it and need to embed it into our systems and our processes so that we can stop stress from compounding.
Right, right. Which brings us to, if you don't mind, can we briefly talk about this reset mindset lovely package here?
Absolutely.
Is this what you present to your clients in workshops or?
Not necessarily. So it could be. It depends, right, on when somebody comes for a workshop, it depends on what their goal is. So, gotcha. But the idea for this was to introduce the book and to introduce the idea and understanding of what a reset moment could be. And one of the quickest ways to reset is through our senses. So
that's what I was getting at for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so, the senses. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So most of what is in there is giving you the quickest form of reset. So there is, you know, a scented candle.
Yes.
So easy, right? But if you just have, you know, this, I think it's vanilla. If you just light a candle, lavender, whatever it is, it changes the mood. It changes the tone, right? You leave the room to go to the restroom. You come back, you really notice it.
Yes.
You know, there's essential oil in there. So actually it's interesting, right? And it's commonly studied that you can smell lemon and it will reset your brain. It opens up all of your senses. I didn't even realize this, but I interviewed somebody who was all about essential oils. And I didn't realize this, through our smell is the fastest way to our nervous system.
Interesting.
That it's faster than any other mechanism. And my daughter was taking a final and the professor said, bring in a lemon.
Yeah.
And, you know, in between at different points, you can sniff the lemon and you'll find yourself more focused and refreshed, you know, throughout the test. So I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting. And it takes a second, right, to sniff the oils, take two or three.
Yeah.
Deep breaths in, and we all know what a difference it can make just to take a few deep breaths. We tell our kids, right? Okay, you know, let's count to three, or let's take a deep breath, and then we'll interact with Johnny and Susie, and you know.
Yeah.
So what else is in there?
There's teas.
There's tea, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned, so you tell me what's in there and what you thought about each of those items.
Well, I thought each item each item catered to the senses. And for me, you know, that relaxes me. When I saw the lemon essential oil, I didn't know lemon had those types of properties or abilities. Right, to really help reset the mind. And I'm thinking as you're saying this, do you know lemongrass is one of my favorite smells ever? And my wife grows lemongrass in her herb garden. She takes part of it to make tea with ginger. And I love the smell of ginger. And so, you know, I mean, those.
And there were ginger chews in there.
Yes, there were ginger chews, which I love as well. And to me, I mean, this, all of this encompasses the senses, right? Whether it's taste or smell, there, I think there's a small Rubik's cube in there, you know, I mean, that's touch and sight, you know, and so all of these things are, they're really honing in on the senses. And how else can you hone in on the senses other than stepping back and taking time? And that's where that reset comes in. And that's where it all came together for me, at least as I perceived it many nights ago before this conversation. And so that's why I wanted to kind of bring that to you and ask that question to mm-hmm. you regarding this wonderful package and the book, which is included, as well as you know, the purpose for the census.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, if an organization, you know, was having a workshop and they want to, you know, talk about those types of things, you know, then definitely that's something that could be included. But nice. You know, a reset moment can also be, you know, on creativity. So sometimes, you know, we go in and we talk about how do we reset our ideas and our thinking, right? So it's not as much about the emotional regulation or the calm or the, you know, that piece of it. It's how do we spark new ideas and things like that. So it's so multi-purposed that I love when we find a word. I'm a little bit of a word geek.
Yeah.
A word that is so powerful because words have energy and intensity and direction. And reset is really one of those words that's pretty universal in that it's not like some people think of it differently.
Yeah.
Like almost everybody understands and it changes like when just saying it, right, automatically triggers that feeling, right? Of, I need to step. It intuitively triggers those three steps.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. One of the last questions I wanted to ask you, Penny, is not to confuse or mix it up with reacting. Okay. But, talking about proactive and reactive reset moments, right? When I hear proactive and when I hear reactive, for some reason, I've always seemed to have this negative connotation with reactive and this positive connotation with the word proactive, thinking that proactive is better. But is one really better than the other, or is a proactive or reactive reset moment used based on the scenario or the circumstances?
Well, I guess, you know, what I talk about is we need both if we're talking about reset moments, because I call them kind of check-ins and timeouts.
Yeah.
Right? A check-in is proactive mm-hmm. because we've kind of scheduled it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more of that. A timeout is we've recognized it in the moment. Right. And that's what the whole idea of reset mindset is about, dynamic reassessment.
Yes.
So we're either in this dynamic reassessment, we're either building in those points where we can stop and reflect. So if you took a football game as a good example, right?
Yeah.
So people who like football, they like sports. So there's certain proactive moments in the game. So being that we've got, you know, the pregame, a team will meet and they'll pregame as a team and set up, you know, what they're going to do. You've got the halftime.
Yep.
You've also got like when you're switching out your teams, your offense and your defense, right? You've got the huddle that happens. These are things that are proactive and they can decide in the moment, you know, during that huddle, what play we're going to run. But then there's the timeouts mm-hmm. where, you know, you didn't, something happened. You need to stop the clock to change the momentum of the game. So you can use those timeouts. The quarterback can call an audible, right? He can change the play on the fly in the moment, because that's what he's deeming. So in that case, right, is that we're using the timeouts or the reactive ones to respond to this. So in a way, I know it's kind of like I'm saying to respond, but it is like it's reactive, but it's giving us that space when we need it, right? So that we can slow down so that we can make another choice.
100%. I got it. Yes. So both are needed. Both are important. And it's whatever time in the process or in the game, which was a great example and analogy that you used to give and demonstrate examples of proactive and reactive. Proactive, you have a game plan. This is your game plan based on things that you've done prior to the game. You had team meetings, you watch film, and then of course the reactive is the timeouts, right? You're in the throes of the game right there, but you have timeouts so you can talk about how do you adjust or make adjustments or audibles to regain that momentum. Oh, yep. Penny, this is absolutely wonderful. I just wanted to make sure that the listeners understood that, you know, from a reset moment perspective, proactive and reactive are both needed. And it's important to know, like, in what part of the process or the event that you would use a proactive reset moment versus a reactive reset moment. This has been an absolute delightful conversation. I know, without a doubt, Penny, I've learned some things. I know the listeners have learned quite a few insights. So for them to learn more insights, Penny, how can the listeners follow you, learn more about the great work you're doing, connecting with you, and picking up a copy of your book?
Well, they can go to theresetmindset.net. That's where sort of my book page is. There's a little video to introduce, and that's where they can get the book. And there's some bonuses that are being offered, so they can, after they buy the book, they can put the code in, and then they'll get some great bonuses. And I'm on Instagram, TikTok. My team has me in all sorts of places, so I'm excited to be all over social.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. We're going to make sure that we have links to your website, links to your social media handles scattered throughout the episode show notes, so the listeners can click those links, learn more about you, connect with you, pick up a copy of your book while listening to this wonderful conversation. Penny Zenker, it's been such a delight having you on the show. I truly, truly appreciate you coming on. And let's please stay in touch. I'd love for us to, you know, stay in touch and hopefully bring you back on the show sometime in the future.
I'd love that. Thank you so much, Aubrey.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel this and feel this way at this time, but in our daily struggles and adversities, you're never alone. Hope is always around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know and you love who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life, and it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.